This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, as we get closer to the start of week two of the college football season. Yes, week one of the NFL season will be here on Thursday. We're all excited, Eagles and Cowboys. But on this podcast, we care more about the injury status of Micah Alejado as opposed to Micah Parsons. So we will get you an update on the Hawaii quarterback a little bit later on here in the podcast. Obviously, injuries are very important to keep an eye on, as you all know, as we head into week two of the season, and maybe a little bit more clarity on some things. But then, are there buy low opportunities? That is certainly a possibility out there when you think about some of the game of the year lines and all of that. But on the docket today, I'm excited as we will have Wednesdays with Wes, as we will talk some situational spots that we look to bet as well. And Brett Ciancia is back on the podcast as the creator of Pick Six Previews. He will be joining us every single week here on the pod as he has a new endeavor over at picksixpreviews.com called Pick Six Plus, getting you some updated analytical numbers and everything from a week that was and looking ahead to the upcoming week matchup breakdowns, etc. So looking forward to talking to Brett and getting into some games this week. I do want to just take a look back at a quick quote, because I want this to be a very quick open, because we got a lot with Wes and a lot with Brett coming up here in just a little bit. But did you happen to catch Mike Gundy and Dan Lanning kind of going back and forth this week? Now, the Dabo and Brian Kelly stuff is funny, but does it really matter from a betting standpoint? Now, you've got this kerfuffle, if you will, and do you get a angry Dan Lanning? We're going to talk about this a little bit with Wes, but here are the quotes from Mike Gundy on his radio show Monday. Quote, "We spent around $7 million over the last 3 years, and I think Oregon spent close to 40 last year alone. That was just 1 year. Now, I might be off by a few million. What I'm saying is they're spending a lot of money. There are some schools that are doing that." He continued, "Oregon is paying a lot of money for their team. From a non-conference standpoint, there's coaches saying they should play teams that are spending the same amount of money." All righty then, let's hear from Dan Lanning regarding Mike Gundy's comments during his weekly press conference. Quote, "Ultimately, how blessed are we to be in a place that's investing in winning? If you want to be a top 10 team in college football, you better be invested in winning. And we spend to win. Some people save to have an excuse for why they don't, right?" That was Dan Lanning. All righty then. And then he continued as Oklahoma State, of course, just played UT Martin. Shout out to the Skyhawks. And Lanning said, quote, "While he doesn't know what they got in their pockets over there, maybe they didn't have as much as them," talking about Oklahoma State. All right. Things just got a little more juicy there with Oregon and Oklahoma State. And I think you remember back to the start of the Coach Prime era. Oregon took on Colorado and they came out in that spot and absolutely hammered them. That was, if I remember correctly, College Game Day was there at Eugene, and it was 35-0 at halftime. So, as you know, I'm not really in the world of laying massive numbers, but with Oklahoma State dealing with an injury at the quarterback position, their quarterback situation is very murky. I believe Hoss Henge is out for a couple of weeks. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name properly there, but they're going to be looking at a backup. And now you've got Dan Lanning. And remember that fiery speech after the Colorado game when I forget. He said, you know, we're here not for the camera. We're here to, you know, dominate. They're fighting for clicks. We're fighting for wins, was what he said after the game. Could you see Oregon coming out and laying it on them a little bit here? Minus 16 and a half in the first half. Enormous number. I totally get that. And maybe I'm being too cute. Maybe you should just go full game. You've seen the market get bet up to 29. There's still a 28 out there at South Point at time of recording. But, man, I love it. I love when you get two coaches going back and forth, especially with the game happening this week. You know, Dabo and Brian Kelly, great, whatever. Good for Brian Kelly, in all sincerity. I thought he clapped back really well in that one, saying that maybe he didn't watch the game or he's a really good grader. I thought Brian Kelly, who more often than not sticks his foot in his mouth, you know, family and all of that. But I actually think he did a pretty good job clapping back properly towards Dabo and how Dabo graded the games. He gave, what, LSU a 65 and Clemson a 58. He said it was like being handed the final exam on the first day of class. So I enjoy it. And I do think, Oregon State, do we get a little more juice for a 12:30 local kick time on Saturday? First half number at FanDuel, 16 and a half. Speaking of FanDuel, last week on the show, we talked about a UL Monroe and St. Francis bet. And we actually wrapped up the podcast breaking it down. But Mikey P, loyal listener to the podcast, tweets in, have you seen any lines posted anywhere for St. Francis versus Buffalo? I have not, Mikey. Hopefully we get those soon. I don't know what number you're ultimately looking for, but yes, St. Francis, who lost, 29-0 to UL Monroe, now gets another payday as a team transitioning to Division III athletics as they go and take on the Buffalo Bulls in week number two. So we will keep our close eyes peeled on that one, Mikey, but appreciate you checking in on that. Well, we'll talk a little more Hawaii later on in the podcast after Wes and Brett. But just a reminder, folks, this broadcast of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast is presented by our good friends at Kahala, the original Aloha shirt brand. Founded in Honolulu in 1936, Kahala has been at the heart of island style for nearly 90 years. Next year marks their 90th anniversary, a celebration of timeless craftsmanship, bold design, and Hawaii's rich cultural story. Most of Kahala's iconic Aloha shirts are still made in Hawaii using original prints and time-honored techniques that showcase the beauty of the islands. But Kahala also innovates with modern styles, offering stretchy performance shirts, cooling polos designed for golf, and comfortable shorts built for every adventure. Discover their full collection and heritage at kahala.com. You can also check them out on Instagram at Kahala. That's K-A-H-A-L-A. Kahala, celebrating 90 years of Aloha and a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will check in with Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes. Could LSU be in that sandwich spot with the boys from Ruston coming to town? We'll dive into some situational spots, best bets as well. Wes Reynolds joins us next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Week one in the books, as you all know, and we're back, baby. Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, every Wednesday here on the podcast feed. Excited for our two-team parlay, if you will, as we will go Wes Reynolds into Brett Ciancia every Wednesday here on the podcast. Wes and I will look at some situational spots. I would say Wes and I very similar in the way we think, not all the time how we bet. And sometimes you got to hold your nose and take some ugly spots here. So, Wes, you know, week two is always fascinating, right? Because you have the overreactions to what we saw in week one. Arch Manning probably is going to be playing JUCO football next year, apparently. But then you get the overreactions. You know, Miami's going to win the national title. Maybe they will. They're really good. I was impressed by them. And we try to find these letdown spots, but the problem is Miami's playing Bethune-Cookman and Georgia Tech in a sandwich spot is playing Gardner-Webb. So it's hard to fully kind of dive into our method of how we like to do this. So I guess before we dive into week two, was there a big takeaway for you from week one that maybe changed your mind a little bit of how you were looking at a particular team or player from the preseason?
Well, we'll get to this team, I know, in terms of like some spots we want to look at for week two that we might want to fade. But in terms of a long-term buy, I was very impressed with LSU, the defense, because that's what we were kind of concerned about. Is like, is this defense really better? You know, because we know that Neusmeyer he's going to be up there, you know, for the Heisman talk all year. I don't think you're going to see really a lot of dip with this guy. And I just thought that Blake Baker, you know, has been an upgrade, at least through game one. We only have a one game sample size, but that defensive performance in the second half from LSU was terrific. And I added them a little bit at 12-1 to win the national championship. And look, formidable schedule, certainly, but this is a team, they look every bit of a playoff team, because now they've shown they can beat a good team with defense when maybe Neusmeyer isn't at his best, and he wasn't bad on Saturday, but I was very impressed with LSU. They were the one that really stood out to me. Like you said, there's overreaction. Like, I think Texas is probably going to, you know, have a really good run and still make the playoff. I don't think they're done because they, you know, because Arch didn't have a very good game. And I got to give credit to Matt Patricia. I was a little bit wrong on Ohio State. I thought, man, that's a lot of defensive personnel that they lost, even though they have five stars all over the defense. But I thought that whole defensive line's gone. You know, and Texas was able to run the ball on him a little bit, but good game plan from Matt Patricia. I think he outdueled Sark in terms of that little battle, Sark's offense versus his defense. So, and Ohio State's got one of the best secondaries in the country. People will degrade Arch Manning. The receivers didn't get any separation either, because Ohio State was all over him. It was like there was nowhere to throw. So very good performance by the defending national champions, I thought, all things considered.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And we talked about it on the Thursday podcast, and I talked about it on the Tailgate Show. By the way, just a reminder, Tailgate Show every Saturday, 9 a.m., SiriusXM channel 158, regional television networks, etc. And I had Jimmy Ott on talking about LSU, and I got to give credit to our guy Jimmy. He was all over the under on the first half and the full game, and that defense, to your point, man, that was impressive. Harold Perkins, they had him not playing the right position a year ago, and he is an absolute menace out there defensively. And it is interesting, you know, when you think about overreactions in the betting market. So if you look back off the – and I'm doing this off of memory – to make the college football playoff, I think Texas was north of $3. They're now $2, minus $2, so still a favorite to make the playoff. Clemson was, I want to say, in the minus 180, minus $2 range. They're down to minus 130. Notre Dame was around minus 180. They're minus 130. And LSU, on the flip side, was a small plus price, and they're now minus 160. So you've seen some market reactions to a big week number one. Let's get into LSU, because I agree, they were phenomenal. You know, Brian Kelly, as much as I want to bag on the dude, he's a good coach, and he resurrected the Notre Dame program, put him at a stable spot where Marcus Freeman, in theory, kind of try to push them up to the next level. He needed that season opening win. He got it. Then we get a little bit of back and forth between him and Dabo, which is fun to enjoy. But situationally, this is a pretty tricky spot. So as we jump into week two, we'll kind of bounce all over the place. You and I try to look for these spots, and this is what you would deem a sandwich spot, right? You just beat Clemson, this game that you put so much effort into. It reminds me a little bit, and I'm going to mention Notre Dame here so everyone get their drinks ready, but it reminds me a little bit of Notre Dame last year going into Texas A&M, how much they built up for that game, and then the clear letdown spot against Northern Illinois where they lost outright. Now, I don't think LSU's going to lose to Louisiana Tech this weekend, but this is a weird spot, right, Wes, where you're playing Clemson, you win that game, you get the monkey off your back, first win in week one since 2019. And then, oh, by the way, you're hosting Florida next week. So if you're Brian Kelly, there's really no need to run this thing up. You want to get out of there healthy. So we got to hope that the boys from Ruston can score a touchdown or two to keep us within this number. But I think you and I are similarly lined here. We took 38 with Louisiana Tech.
And it's still scary even doing that when you look at what Louisiana Tech, last week they shut out Southeast Louisiana, but they actually got outgained by C-Law. C-Law had three turnovers and only 24 points for Louisiana Tech. Sonny Cumbie, the coach, corps, Texas Tech pedigree, played there for the Red Raiders. So, you know, this is going to be a little bit more of an up-tempo spread, you know, a lot of short passing, and that's what they're going to do. And maybe that will use LSU speed against them. But, yeah, I just think it's a very tough spot for LSU. Louisiana Tech, you got to think, okay, you're going to get an effort, because I'm sure there's a roster full of guys from there in Ruston that would have loved to play at LSU and someplace like that, maybe didn't get recruited, or maybe were at a bigger Power Four, didn't work out, so they end up at Louisiana Tech. And then Florida, of course, coming in next week, as you mentioned, Tim. I think in these SEC games, it used to be they didn't start until October. Now you got these SEC games early in September. And you kind of saw it last year with LSU, even though they came off a loss. They only beat Nichols by 23. Now, Nichols was ranked in the FCS because LSU had at South Carolina on deck where they made that comeback. But, yeah, this just seems like a little bit of a, you know, kind of a get through it. And plus the fact LSU, that was a physical game on Saturday night against Clemson. Oh, yeah. Sometimes when you have that real physical game, that wear and tear stays with you an extra week. And I think it very well could for LSU. I think they win comfortably, but I thought 38 was a big number. I think it even opened close to 40 at some places, but anything 38 or better, I think, is definitely worth a poke on the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs.
Yeah. And you think about, you know, all the reports that you heard about, you know, the blocking sleds that had Peter Woods and all the defensive linemen on there for LSU or from Clemson, and then the Tiger paw prints all over the facility. So there was so much effort, and look, it worked out. And I got to give this, you know, final thought on LSU here. I was really curious about their offensive line going up against maybe the best defensive line in college football. And I thought they held up their own. And I tell you what, man, Garrett Nussmeier, I don't think this is an overreact. That dude's the real deal. Like, that is a NFL quarterback, very well could be the number one overall pick. I thought he was phenomenal in that game. But I want to flip to the other side. And our mutual friend Stucky over the Action Network had a couple of tweets that I want to bring to the air here regarding a spot for Texas and Clemson, because I think most people anticipate Texas when they go to San Jose State and Clemson as they, you know, get ready for their second game of the season against Troy, are just going to go out there and lay the wood. And maybe they will, but this is from Stucky. Probably hear about betting Texas or Clemson this week against inferior opponents because they'll be angry after a big loss. Both could win by 40, but historically teams in that spot come out flatter than you might expect with a potentially inflated line. Here's the stat courtesy of our guy Stuck. Top 15 teams off of a top 15 loss as a 30-plus point favorite, all right, you with me? That's a lot of things, are just 26% ATS over the last 20 years, failing to cover by about a touchdown. So that being said, you've got Texas laying 36.5 against San Jose State. We talked about this yesterday, me and Colby Dant did. Very disappointing performance from San Jose State. Ken Niumatalolo said that it was one of the worst losses of his career, so keep that in mind there. And then Clemson takes on Troy, and they're a 33.5 point favorite there. So it's just a buyer beware. It's human nature to think that these teams are going to come out angry and going to beat the living crap out of inferior foes. But I thought that was an interesting nugget that Stuck brought to light there that said, you know, just be careful a little bit by immediately laying the chalk.
Yeah, exactly. And at Texas, not so much next week. They have UTEP, but Clemson does have a road game on Thursday night at Georgia Tech. the ACC opener. So I'm not really rushing
buyer
to the
beware
window
on that one.
Yeah, I'm not really rushing to the window to bet Clemson. They might be able to lay out Troy, but I would think Clemson of those two would be the less likely to cover than Texas, because San Jose just might be really down. Could not stop a very basic offense in Central Michigan that was pretty much just running the ball every single time in the second half and did enough to get that win.
Yeah, that was certainly disheartening. We talked a little bit about it yesterday with Colby, as both Colby and I. Colby was a little bit more bullish on San Jose State. I still hold out hope that this San Jose State team, based off of their schedule, could make it to the conference championship there in the Mountain West. But boy, that is a conference that did not have a great opening week. Maybe New Mexico is going to be better than we anticipate in that one. You know, I want to get to a game that I have not bet yet, and I'm debating whether or not I'll ultimately get there. It's the game of the week. It's Michigan at Oklahoma. Michigan fails to cover against New Mexico, and then Oklahoma beats Illinois State. John Mateer puts up great numbers, and you know, it's funny. I think back to an off-season podcast with Stanford Steve where he asked me, why do you hate John Mateer? And I said, I don't hate John Mateer. I was hesitant to jump all the way into the deep end with John Mateer when some of his numbers are inflated against inferior opponents. And this is probably going to be the best defense he's ever faced as a collegiate quarterback. The kid's exciting to watch. Curious your thoughts on Oklahoma, Michigan, because we have seen, you know, a game of the year line that was hovering around 3 move up to around 5. South Point was actually sitting at 6 for a little bit. They're back down at 5. Any thoughts on Michigan, Oklahoma on Saturday night?
And I understand a little bit of move to Oklahoma because this is Bryce Underwood going to make his first road start and only his second start as a true freshman. And, you know, Michigan never really threatened to cover that big number, even though I think they pretty much dominated the game against New Mexico, only won by 17. But I understand the move to the under here. And with John Mateer, you know, it's not just John Mateer, it's Ben Arbuckle, who, you know, runs that up-tempo offense, was at Western Kentucky and then was the OC at Washington State. So he's been a big upgrade as offensive coordinator, but you're playing against one of the better defenses in the country and one of the better defensive coaches, I think, in Wink Martindale, who, of course, had a lot of success as a defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens for many years. So you're not going to surprise Michigan. Like, you're not going to trick that defense. So that's why you're seeing this total as low as 45.5, because, man, you look at that, it's like, oh my God, like that seems like an astonishingly low total for this game, knowing that Oklahoma can go up tempo. And Oklahoma, by the way, did get off to a little bit of a slow start last week, I thought, against Illinois State. I know that under got hammered watching the board on Saturday, and that easily went under. And Illinois State didn't really put up anything on the board, but 35-3 was the final score, even though Oklahoma had almost 500 yards. I would lean with the under here. I think the market probably has it right. You've missed a little bit of value if you didn't get that 47, so maybe wait on it. I don't have a play on this game as of yet.
Yeah, my initial inclination was Michigan, but I think I agree with you. You know, it's funny. I had John Jansen, who's now the color analyst for Michigan, on VSiN Primetime during the offseason, and he talked glowingly about the defense up there at Michigan, and even though they lost 2 top 15 picks on the defensive line, he felt like there was a chance this defense could be better. Now, we'll see where both these teams may be playing a little vanilla. I would imagine they were against very, very inferior competition there. I want to get to another game that I think is very fascinating because, you know, you look at the way people who make power ratings look at Illinois, and then you look at the way the AP poll looks at Illinois, and it's two completely different mindsets at this point in time. And you can look at Bill Conley, you can look at, you know, Humans and Paul Stone when they put out their top 25 or whoever. There's a very big gap right now between people who make their power ratings and AP polls. And sometimes, Wes, this is where we, the bettors, can really benefit. So Illinois is laying 3 on the road at Duke. And I think a lot of people are going to be scratching their heads and saying, what the hell is up with this line? As I would like to say, this is a little stinky poo, right? Like, everybody in the world is going to be on Illinois. The lock of the century is that on Thursday night, when Scott Van Pelt goes on his sports center gives out winners, Duke 1 million percent will be.
He'll have Duke. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Lock of the century. He'll have Duke there. Will you have Duke? I bet Duke a little bit, took the three. I think this number's accurate. And I think, you know, you look at some people, I know me and Brett are going to talk about this here in a little bit, but I think this number, people are a little bit off on what Illinois really is in the eyes of handicappers and odds makers.
Yeah, to me, it's going to be Duke or nothing. I'm waiting. I'm seeing a little bit of 3-15 on Illinois out there at a couple places. So that's telling me this could go to 3.5. And, you know, immediately that'll get gobbled up when that appears on the sure. screen. Like, that'll get gobbled up right away. And hopefully I'm one of the gobblers for it. But
it's too early for Thanksgiving talk.
I know. We're just getting to Labor Day, but we're already got the pumpkin coffee. And nevertheless, Duke, look, they got off to a slow start against Elon. And then I thought really picked it up in the second half. I think Mensa is an upgrade at quarterback. He was, you know, 389, 3 touchdowns, 79% completion. You know, we saw Malik Murphy, of course, struggle Saturday night for Oregon State against Cal. He's an upgrade at quarterback, I think. And a lot of people are looking past Duke. Like, that's not an easy game for Illinois. Manny Diaz, first year, got him 9-5. Like, Duke was a very solid team last year and brings a decent amount of personnel back. So I think Illinois has been a little bit overpriced in the market. You know, the fact that some are saying, oh, this is a top 10 team, you know, or Illinois is this year's Indiana, you know, maybe slow our roll there. Remember Illinois went, well, I'm trying to remember, where'd they go, like 6-1 in less than in games decided by 7 or less? Like, they had a lot of fortune. They had 2 overtime games, which they easily could have lost last year, to Nebraska and also to Purdue. So I'm a little bit gun-shy. It's going to be Duke or nothing for me on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm going to be on Duke. I actually already bet it, so that certainly will be a spot that I will be in on when we do our Thursday podcast. Another game that I'm mad at myself because, you know, you mentioned the market ticking up a little bit on Illinois, and it does sometimes. I know it's hard, and I get yelled at. I got yelled at by my dad all my whole life about not being patient. And you have to be patient sometimes. If you miss that number, there could be a movement back towards that number. And a game I want to bring up here is Mississippi State and Arizona State. And this game will be in Stark, Vegas. Our colleague Stormy will be on the sidelines there. So bring the multiple, I guess, I don't even know what the hell she's going to do with her IFBs down there because it's going to be loud. Those bells are going to be ringing the whole time. I was hoping to get 7.5. I missed the 7. It's 6.5 right now, but there is a juice 6.5 at DraftKings. So maybe we get back to a 7 here at a couple of shops at some point. I'm intrigued by Mississippi State here in this spot, man. And I know last year, Arizona State was early on, if I remember correctly, week 1, everybody bet against them against Wyoming. They smashed them. I think they got some. Mississippi State got some love, if I remember correctly, week 2 last year. Cam Scadaboo went for 262 yards. But I was, I'll say this. I know it was Southern Miss, but that was a team that most people thought could be pesky in that spot. And Mississippi State really controlled that game against Southern Miss, Wes. 6.5 right now. Any interest in looking at the Cowbells on Saturday night?
I would like the 7 to show, and it may show again because you have a battle here of, I think, a team now with expectations that didn't have them last year, and that's Arizona State. And then you have a team with very little expectations in Mississippi State. And, you know, Mississippi State got beat out there last year. And I think Arizona State is the better team, but I think that this is a tough travel. You're going down south. This is not easy. It's going to be a night game. This is an easy trip. Arizona State made a similar one last year against Texas State, but that was a competitive game against them and the Bobcats. So,
and if I remember correctly, didn't that line move like crazy in that game?
It did. It did. And Arizona State got some breaks and might have gotten a little bit lucky to cover, to be honest with you. So, yeah, it's 7 or better, Mississippi State, but everybody's out ahead of it, man. These are moving faster than ever before. So, a lot of people thinking what we're thinking there, I think, on the Bulldogs.
Yeah, you got to be quick. You got to be quick on the trigger, and that's certainly something that that I missed on that particular game. All right, let's just hit a couple of other games to wrap things up here. It's not a juicy week, but I think there's some interesting spots certainly out there. I want to get your thoughts on your beloved Hoosiers. And good call by you. You said Old Dominion with some familiarity from the Sun Belt. Ricky Ronnie's squad could be competitive. And Indiana doesn't get anywhere close to covering against the Monarchs. 24-14, the final score. And then the bully, Kirk Cignetti, says, quote, a pedestrian win at best. So we know the propensity a year ago to get those covers. Is this a situation where the poor Kennesaw State Owls might be the victim of an angry Cignetti there on the sideline? Right now, you're looking at 35 with your Hoosiers.
Yeah, it very well could be. And then, of course, it didn't start off well for Indiana. Old Dominion, first play from scrimmage, 75-yard keeper by the quarterback to score. And actually, he had two long ones, a 75 and a 78. So you're thinking, oh, that defense played awful. It really didn't for Indiana. The defense was actually pretty solid, except for those two plays. And I thought Indiana wanted to really make an effort to run the ball, too. Roman Hemby, the transfer from Maryland, Kalon Black. So they ran the ball very well. I think they'll do the same here. If you don't want to lay the points, what I might be looking at is a team total over, and I'm seeing even as low as 42.5 out there, where they may score a bunch of points and maybe not be able to help it against Kennesaw State. But the market has gone up. It's now to 36. So it would be the Hoosiers or nothing, but there's still some things they got to work out. Like Mendoza, I thought was a little choppy in his debut for the Hoosiers. They couldn't find Surratt until the second half, their stud receiver. So probably team total over. I think Indiana probably gets at least 45 here. This looks like 45-7. Like if you're just thinking of a score, that's going to be a common projection on this one.
So two teams that There's a saying or belief in the betting world, right? If a team loses to an FCS team or struggles against an FCS team, you can bet on them and get them a little bit on sale. The problem about Saturday is that Kansas State almost lost to North Dakota. I hitched my wagon to the wrong Dakota, Wes. And Army did lose to an FCS team in Tarleton State. Now, if you look at some post-game win expectancies, Tarleton State was 33%. So it wasn't like Army played like complete and utter garbage. But something to keep an eye on, the quarterback, Coleman, for Army may be out for this game. He got nicked up against Tarleton State. So this game, we've seen support for Kansas State. You and Todd Furman at different times on this podcast gave out Army under 7.5. So always nice to have an under win total when they lose to an FCS team. What do you expect in this one in the Little Apple? Because both of these teams, very disappointing here in the early portion of the season.
Yeah, Kansas State was life and death to beat the
touchdown.
The school formerly known as the Fighting Sioux. I think Randy McKay still wears that jersey around, though, our buddy. So we're confusing the Dakotas. Where are you, McKay, when we need you to break these teams down? But anywho, I think Kansas State probably is right here. You've seen those 16.5s disappear, and it's now 17. Army, it's tough to lay points to a service academy. You know that service academy dogs have eaten for the better part, or ate rather, for the better part of a couple decades now, whether it's Army or Navy or Air Force. So that's why I'm a little bit gun shy, even though this could be a little bit of a buy low on Kansas State, because now all of a sudden it's like, man, Kansas State's not going to have a chance in the Big 12 with Utah being so impressive against UCLA, with Arizona State and with Iowa State. We'll see how they do in the Cy-Hawk game, but this could be – it'd be K-State or pass for me, but right now I'm going to leave it alone because I don't like laying points to a service academy.
Speaking of service academies, we got Trent Dilfer going up to Annapolis to take on Navy. What jumps out to you about this one is this number has been on the move. 21 is the number right now for the mids. Total sits at 60 right now, so a little bit of overlove has hit the market on this game too.
Yeah, I did play some over here. I would maybe lean UAB if I got north of 21, which very well could happen. UAB's offense, I think with Kitna in his second year, they're going to move the ball, and Trent Dilfer is going to let him throw the ball here as well. But man, I don't know how UAB gave up 42 to Alabama State last week of the FCS, and then Navy, you know, kind of finished it off. I think they're in the fourth quarter. They played two different quarterbacks. They played Horvath, and they also played Braxton Woodson as well. But they were able to cook with the running game like they always are. 56 for 464, as a matter of fact, against VMI. So I don't really see a lot of stops here. Would lean UAB if I got north of three touchdowns, but I am already on the over. That's one of the totals I played. Also, Miami of Ohio and Rutgers under. Miami got shut out last week at Wisconsin. I think Miami, they lost a lot. They're a team that I think is really going to struggle in the MAC this year. So under in that one, despite the fact that Rutgers and Ohio had a shootout in week number one.
Yeah, Daquan Finn can only do so much as he returns to the MAC there after his stint with the Baylor Bears. All right, before we get out of here, couple other maybe just interesting spots. Oklahoma State takes on Oregon. We saw Dan Lanning and Gundy kind of going back and forth talking about NIL and all of that. And Gundy's taking shots at the price tag of Oregon's roster. And then Lanning drops a, what was UT Martin making? So yeah, we got that going on, but we also have an injury. Haas Henge, Oklahoma State's quarterback. He's going to be sidelined here. So man, this is a big number. Oregon up to a 29-point favorite against the Pokes of Oklahoma State.
And the moment I say, because we were saying that before he came on, that's a big number, I'd only lay it. Because I think Dan Lanning,
he's pissed.
He is one of those guys that, you know, kind of wears his heart on his sleeve a little bit. He's one of those guys that's like, you know what? If he's pissed, he lets you know he's pissed. And he'll take it out on an opponent. And Oregon, you know, I thought good performance against Montana State last week, blew him out. Dante Moore, because the market's down on Oregon. I think you might have bet the season wins under, as I did at 10.5, laying some juice. But Dante Moore's second year in this system, I think the offense is going to be fine. We'll see how the defense holds up against better competition. But this would only be laying rather than taking here.
Yeah, I was curious what the first half number is, and we've seen it go from 16.5 to 17.5. So money coming in on that one. All right, last one for me, a win total. I didn't bet under Oregon, but I know a bunch of people, including yourself, that did. And, you know, I'm curious to see what the Ducks will look like this year. A team I did bet under their total, and we got our first loss, as anticipated, is Syracuse. And once again, the market beating us to it, depending on when you got it. UConn opens up as an 8.5-point underdog up at the Carrier Dome or whatever they're calling it these days. And now it's at 6.5. So we've seen movement here with the Huskies. I would love to get a 7 if it gets back there. But UConn could be feisty here. I think this could be a tricky spot here for Syracuse, a team that I am not that interested in this year.
Yeah, Syracuse had a chance actually a couple times to get in that back door against Tennessee. Couldn't make it happen. I thought we're better in the second half. I thought Angeli was fine, but they couldn't run the ball. And you know, maybe it's a byproduct of, okay, you're going against an SEC defensive line, which clearly UConn does not have. But I have Syracuse kind of worries me in terms of being able to run the ball. They did lose a lot, actually, out of the portal. Now, Fran Brown's a good recruiter, but this might be, you know, just kind of a retooling year here. So, and Connecticut, I think, takes this seriously because, you know,
this is their Super Bowl.
They're kind of that program in the Northeast that nobody focuses on. And it's like, you know, what conference are they in? And then, you know, they don't know much about them. This is big for them. This is absolutely big for Connecticut. So I think the market has it right. Hopefully a 7 reappears. I'll take a small poke with the Huskies, but I think that they have it right. Syracuse to me, even though I think Angeli's a fine quarterback and he's a gamer, man, they don't have a lot of support in that running game. They were getting tackled in the backfield over and over again on Saturday against Tennessee.
All right, last one I want to hit on here. You got the Clay Helton return game as Georgia Southern heads to the Coliseum. I saw that Georgia Southern will be staying out west. They played Fresno State on Saturday. Boy, yikes to get lambasted by Fresno State like that after they looked pretty pedestrian in their season opener. USC drops a casual 73 spot on Missouri State. Is this a spot where USC might not be able to help themselves and getting so many points? I see a team total at 44.5 out there on USC.
Yeah, it could be. And market, by the way, coming in on the under here, because Georgia Southern did nothing in the second half against Fresno State. And Fresno State was just able to run the ball all over him with Donaldson. Like, EJ Warner really didn't have to do much in the second half. One thing I'll say for USC, and I think you and I, that was one of the winners we had last week, was USC. it reminds me of what a pro bettor, Alan Boston, once said, focus favorites are the nuts. Because we like to have those underdogs, and we like to bet those underdogs. Yep. But I love laying those big favorites that are no doubters, too. And USC was last week. Maiava and the first team really didn't play hardly at all in the second half, and they dominated Missouri State. That was Missouri State's first FBS game. Now they're a member of Conference USA. And I think USC could do it again. I know Georgia Southern did stay out west, so they didn't go back home for the travel, but USC, you're laying north now of 4 touchdowns, and I think that might not be enough here. So you could either play team total at over 42.5, 44.5. I think there's more 44.5, or you could just lay it with the Trojans. Market is coming in on the under. I don't know how Georgia Southern is going to score, and I think this USC defense might be at least a little bit improved. And you got a team that nobody's talking about, Tim.
Yep.
They weren't ranked. They're still not ranked. So they're maybe wanting to lay some lumber here early in the season. So I think Fight On here is going to be all over Clay Helton and his return to L.A. Even though everybody hates him out there, he was the last USC coach, by the way, to win a Rose Bowl. You know, let's put that out there. Put a little respect on Clay Helton's name, but they're probably not going to show him a lot of respect on Saturday.
Wes, always appreciate you, sir. Fight on, and we will we'll fight on in the Westgate College Contest. Yes. You and I need to lick our wounds after that one.
We do, but it's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
That's right. There he is, Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes every Wednesday here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And every Wednesday, we will lead into Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews. And now Pick 6 Plus will dive into his recap of Week 1 and what to expect in Week 2. We'll do that next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We keep it rolling along, and we go from Wednesdays with Wes to Wednesdays with Brett. Working progress, working title there for this one. Pick 6 Previews. You know Brett Ciancia, an amazing product that so many of us bettors have acquired over the years. It has grown, which we are excited about. We've partnered up with Pick 6 Previews over the last 2 years here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And now Brett has decided, you know what? It's been so fun in the summertime. Let's do it in season. Now Pick 6 Plus is something you can add to your tool belt each and every week. Brett Ciancia is also going to join us every single week here on the podcast. Brett, great to have you back on the show. And give us the lowdown. What is Pick 6 Plus, and how can we grab Pick 6 Plus each and every week?
Absolutely, Tim. Well, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be joining here for the season on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Really appreciate having me on, and congrats so far on the surge up the leaderboard. We're going to get you into the top 100, maybe even a top 25.
Woo!
Hey, let's keep up the momentum and have a big season here. But yeah, thanks for having me on, and thanks for the praise for Pick 6 Previews, of course, the College Football Preview Magazine. Magazine season's starting to fade once the season kicks off, but this time around, we have an in-season product called Pick 6 Plus. It's all the information and advanced stats that you like from my magazine, but now updated weekly. You know, I find once we kick a season off, I end up having like 100 tabs open on my computer. But now what I wanted to design is all the information that you want as a bettor or a fan per team on one page per team. So everything. It's advanced stats. It's line projections, even situational splits. You know, how's a team coming off a bye historically the last couple of years as the home team or a road dog, all the different situational splits you'd like, talent profile comparisons, who has the more NFL draft prospects, that kind of thing. But so much more. Go check it out, pick6previews.com/plus. We'd love to have you on board. Actually, just emailed out the first edition today. So really excited to kick off this season.
Yeah, and some of the things that jumped out to me right there on the front page of Pick 6 Plus, your updated playoff bracket, teams of the week, biggest risers, coordinators that had a terrific performance. So a lot to get into here. So we'll do each week, we'll do a little bit of a look back and then a look ahead as well. So let's jump into the biggest riser. So Utah was a team that I was pretty high on, and reading through Pick 6 previews, I was like, uh-oh, this isn't great. They had a very strong performance in week one. You never want to overreact too much, but Utah does look like, fresh off of their performance out at the Rose Bowl, a team that rose a decent amount in your ratings.
Yeah, so in the preview magazine, I had them fourth in a crowded Big 12 race, and it's the 14th year doing Pick 6 previews. I think this was the most wide-open conference race I've ever covered. So they were a face in the crowd, a really crowded room there. But what they showed me on Saturday night in the Rose Bowl was unbelievable. Every question I had about Utah was answered. You know, you're wondering, how would that new scheme look? Jason Beck coming over from New Mexico, bringing his quarterback, Devin Dampier. How would they adjust to the upgraded, you know, opponents here, going to the from the Mountain West to the Power Four? It clicked immediately. I mean, they looked incredible on offense. They rolled up some 300 yards rushing on UCLA. Again, not the best team in the country, but a Power Four opponent, no less, on the road. So really, really impressed me. A 43-10 final. It's actually the number two game grade of the week for me. And I think when you add that all up, the biggest riser on the board. Because in a crowded Big 12, they now look like the number one team. It might be ever so slightly, but they have the edge, and right now the projected team from the Big 12 into the playoff.
So another team that had a eye-opening performance in week one, of course, was Florida State. As Alabama goes into Tallahassee as a two-touchdown favorite, Alabama, a team that, look, you can't sit here and take, you know, praise, hey, I had Utah to win the Big 12. I did. But I also had Alabama making the playoff. I guess technically not dead yet, but I was all in on this Alabama team, and boy, was I disappointed in that performance. But Florida State was fantastic. What was your game grade on the Seminoles, and how much did you upgrade Florida State?
Yeah, well, hey, you and me both on Alabama. And I know I was on your show on VSiN all throughout the summer praising Alabama, looking for that second-year coach bonus, all that NFL talent on paper. You got to play the games. You got to coach them up. And, you know, stuff like a lack of effort, lack of physicality, stuff I'd never seen from Alabama since the early 2000s came to fruition there for Alabama. So downgrade there, but really an upgrade with Florida State. And, you know, two great coordinator hires. They both, you know, were excellent against Alabama. You had Gus Malzahn. He seems to have Alabama's number over the years. Had some success as Auburn's head coach, obviously, but he schemed it up well. Thomas Castellanos, he backed up his big summer bravado there, his big quotes, and backed it up. So talking about upgrades, yeah, I mean, coming into the season, I had Florida State outside the top 25. I had them looking like a 7-5 type team. But now with this big performance, and it looks like they're a lot cleaner on both sides of the ball, the talent level is certainly there on both sides of the ball from the transfer portal. I've upgraded them from 7-5 range to more like a 9-3. Of course, they have some tough spots coming up with when they host Miami, traveling to Clemson and traveling to Florida. But otherwise, I could see them as a favorite the rest of the way. So you're looking like a 9-win team, and we'll see if they can continue to improve as the season goes on.
So on the flip side of that, Alabama, and we talked about it on Tuesday's podcast, this is now 14 games into the DeBoer era. They've lost four different times as a 14-plus point favorite, and really – it was a beatdown there in Tallahassee. You look at postgame win expectancy, 97% for Florida State. This was not a fluky situation whatsoever. How much did you downgrade this Alabama team from where you had them preseason?
Yeah, well, I guess there's two parts here. I think in terms of a power ratings, it's a little bit slower to sure, downgrade them. You don't want to overreact too much to one game numbers-wise. You know, I had them number four coming into the year. So with this game grade put in there, they're still in the top 10 from a power ratings perspective. But sometimes what your eye showed us is a little bit different than what the power ratings and the numbers and the formulas would show. Because what we saw from Alabama, they don't look like a playoff team. So even though I have them still in my top 10 in my numbers, my power ratings, from eye test and from, you know, a playoff projection perspective, I don't see it. And maybe they'll prove me wrong. Maybe they'll fix it. But these aren't things, these aren't problems like a drop pass or throwing in a double coverage or maybe a scheme issue. These were things like just not hustling, you know, lack of physicality at the point of attack, lines of scrimmages, they're being dominated. So these don't really turn around game to game. So we'll see. I think I'm going to throw them out of the playoff bracket for now. And it might take a few weeks for this power ratings to really, really throw them out of the top 10, but certainly a downgrade after 1 week.
So as you, I guess before we dive into your results from week one, is there, what is the recipe to putting together your game grades? You know, how do you come out? How does this number spit out for you ultimately? Because this is something certainly that you have put in your preview magazine for years and, you know, top five games the last 5 years for each team, bottom five games. So what do you do to spit out that game grade?
Yeah, well, it's an important part of the prediction logic for the magazine. And then, of course, now in season, game to game, week to week, it's pretty much drives the power ratings for me. It's a lot of stuff. I mean, right away, it's margin of victory. I think that's the biggest category. Yardage totals, yardage per play, those margins. Explosive plays, how they defend explosive plays, a little bit of turnovers in there. But yeah, all the key metrics and stats from a game, I know it's all about how you weight the variables, but I feel like I've got it down to a pretty good science. And another thing I put in the magazine and now in Pick 6 Plus is the opponent adjusted per play stats. And it sounds like a mouthful, but basically it's how a team does compared to how their opponent tends to do, right? So with Clemson, if they average 5 yards a play against LSU, and throughout the year LSU ends up giving up 3 yards a play, then that's a plus two. And you know, within the context of that opponent, that's how I try and grade teams. Now, we're here 1 week in. Of course, you can't really get an opponent adjustment because everyone just played one game. So it's all like, you know, zeros across the board right now. But that goes into it too. So yeah, to answer your question, just a mix of margin of victory, yardage totals, yardage per play. I do factor in some talent ratings too, especially early in the season. You have to have somewhat of a foundation. You can't just go off one game. So, you know, talent in there, coaching effect, all kinds of stuff. But I feel like I've figured out the balance. That's what it's all about, is balancing different variables.
Bunch of games this week. And look, it's not as star-studded as week one, but I still think there's some really intriguing games. And I think the one that jumps out to a lot of people is Illinois and Duke from a betting standpoint. Illinois, according to the AP poll, coming in at number 11, and they're only a 3-point favorite on the road at Duke. And this is going to be a game, if I had to guess, Brett, that this is going to be, you hear pros versus Joes, sharp guys versus, you know, your average better. Not to say that the pros always win, but I was told when I moved to town, it was a great saying from an odds maker, said, "We make ratings, not rankings." And sometimes you can utilize the AP poll to bet against those particular teams that might be a little bit overinflated. So Illinois and Duke, I was looking at your numbers. Pretty interesting to see where you're at on this game with the Blue Devils as a 3-point home dog against Illinois.
Yeah, well, I agree with you there regarding AP rankings versus ratings. And this is a team, I'm glad you brought them up, with Illinois. I got so much flack all summer and now into the fall about where I rated Illinois. Of course, they went 10 wins last year, you know, special season. They grind out a lot of close wins. But projecting forward, I didn't see it. They did not have the stat profile of a top 10 or a playoff team. And I graded them as such. I have them 35th coming into the season. And that raised a lot of eyebrows. No friends made in Champaign, Illinois this year, I'll tell you that. But I stand by it. I mean, I think it was great coaching last year, but I just don't think they have the roster talent. I think they have 3 4 stars in their entire 44-man two deep. That's just not a playoff caliber roster. So all that to say, let's look ahead to this game. I think the wrong team's favored. I think you see Illinois is favored by 3 points heading into Duke. I think it's more of a toss-up. So right away, some value there for Duke bettors. And then you look at these two. You know, Duke is a team that the public has really struggled with. If you look at it, if you look at their spots as a home team, the last 3 years as a home team, they're 13-6 as a home team against the spread the last 3 years. But here's the one that really stands out. As a home dog, they're 6-1 against the spread the last 3 years. And that's where they're at here with Illinois. So this is a team that really, really excels against the spread. Not just last year, but really the last 3 years, looking at a trend here. So I think there's value with Duke. I like what they have at quarterback. They upgraded there. One of the biggest NIL deals of the this cycle, bringing in Mensah from Tulane. He showed off his big arm in the opener there against Elon, and a couple playmakers at receiver I like. But you have a Manny Diaz defense as well. So on the field, you know, advanced stats, situational splits, it's all looking towards Duke. And I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to go with Duke here as the home dog to go win it outright.
So Baylor in week one was a team that there were a lot of disagreements out there. Some people I trusted really liked Auburn, whether it be on a cheap money line price or lay in the points. And then some people I really respect their opinion were on the Baylor Bears. And ultimately, it was a victory for Auburn, as you just saw the athleticism there and the defense for Baylor, in my opinion, just couldn't keep up. Now they go and play SMU, a revenge spot, if you will, as well. What did your projection come out to Baylor SMU, as this game is, you know, a really big one here for Baylor, as Dave Aranda's squad can't start the season 0-2. They're on the road, though, at SMU, but you have seen some market love here for the Bears, as this number has sunk from, you know, as high as 4 down to 2.5.
Yeah, well, I've got it at 1 for SMU and almost some in the pick 'em range. I like Baylor here. I think there's some value with the Baylor pick. Yeah, talking about both teams in week one, Baylor, they took on Auburn. That's a tough SEC test. A team themselves that might be underrated a bit with Auburn, but they actually outgained Auburn. They came up small in the red zone a couple times. Maybe that score, that 14-point margin, is a little bit misleading. I think that Baylor fought hard. I know the defense broke down against the run. They're going to need to fix that. But I think you have still a top 25 caliber team with Baylor. And then looking at SMU, they took on a team that last year was Division II with East Texas A&M. It's the old Texas A&M Commerce. And I wasn't overly impressed. I know that there were some wide open receivers. You're going to get that against a D2 team. But the SMU missed tackles caught my eye. There were a lot of plays, yards after contact, yards after catch, where there were missed tackles by SMU. So, you know, Kevin Jennings continued to turn the ball over. He had a fumble and a pick. So I think I'm going to go Baylor here. I still think they're a top 25 team. SMU is one of those teams that I'm fading a bit this year. So I think I'm going to stick with it here. I'm going to go Baylor to win. And, you know, this doesn't impact this game, but they are riding a 13-game win streak against SMU dating back decades. So, you know, factor that in, if you will. I don't think it applies right now, but just the interesting footnote there, as they are both now in the Power Four landscape.
Yeah, I misspoke, by the way. I said revenge spot. I was thinking of SMU-TCU, that, of course, the Iron Skillet game. So
that's going to be spicy coming up in a couple weeks. I can't wait.
Yeah. By the way, TCU, your number one graded team in week one, right?
Yeah. Speaking of upgrades, I think you got to upgrade TCU a bit. They absolutely dominated UNC. Now, if you turned in the first couple minutes of that game, UNC went right down the field. It looked like the media was about to crown Bill Belichick the king of football, and it was already turning into that on the broadcast. But then TCU had other plans in mind. They dropped 41 unanswered points, end up dropping 48 points on a Belichick team. That's the most he's ever allowed in a game. Talking 500-plus NFL games, and of course, here's first college game. Welcome to the Big 12. Welcome to college football, to the Belichick defense. But no, I really like what we have with TCU. It's a team we spoke about on your show earlier in the summer. Mm-hmm. I had them in my preseason top 25. I love what they have on offense. Talking to Coach Sonny Dykes, question I had for him was, losing their top two receivers, how would they rebound? He loved his room, and you saw that come true Monday night. A lot of young four-stars and transfers that came in. So I like TCU a lot. You can upgrade them even higher into this Big 12 race now. So I think Utah, Texas Tech, TCU, and Arizona State, they'd be my four. I know it's still a crowded conference, but those would be the four I'd look at within the Big 12.
Well, speaking of the Big 12, a team that gets a massive win in week zero, Iowa State, and I give them credit. I thought it would be a brutal spot to come back home, play an FCS team. Historically, Iowa State has not played FCS teams all that well. And boy, they were ready to go against the Coyotes. I think South Dakota scored an early touchdown, giving me a little bit of hope. And then it was all Iowa State after that. On the flip side, Iowa, I was pretty excited about Mark Gronowski. Still am a little bit, but a pretty ho-hum performance against Albany. Right now, Iowa and Iowa State, the Cy-Hawk game, one of the better rivalries in college football. This will be big noon kickoff on Saturday there in Iowa City. What do you make of this game? Number sits at 3 right now.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. In fact, my numbers agree. I've got it Iowa State by 3, and I think I'm going to side with them here to cover that. If you look at this matchup, you know you're going to get great defense. You're going to get great special teams. It's a hated in-state rival, so you have that juice. If you're looking at how tight this game usually is, too, the last 5 years, the average margin of victory is 4 points. I mean, it's always within a point or two. I think you're going to get that again, probably anywhere from that 3-point Iowa State win to like 7 or single digits. So I like Iowa State here. I trust Rocco Becht a lot. I mean, he is a magician in the fourth quarter. Last year, he led 4 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter, held on again in week 0 in Ireland for another late game win. So I like what they have at quarterback. I trust Matt Campbell as a coach. Two great defensive coordinators in this one on both sides, but I think the total package, are going to go with Iowa State. Iowa, they have not impressed me there against Albany with Gronowski, but we'll see. Still an FCS test, but yeah, I'm going to go Iowa State here, -3.
All right, lastly, I want to go to Stark Vegas. We talked about this briefly with Wes, and this is going to be a phenomenal atmosphere down in in Starkville. They were in Hattiesburg last week. And, you know, I got to give Mississippi State credit. We talked about this briefly with Wes. Southern Miss was a team that I think a lot of people expected to be competitive there against Mississippi State. And I thought the Bulldogs did a really good job there, winning that game, getting the cover. And you got a little bit of revenge angle here against Arizona State as they went to Tempe last year and lost this game. Right now, market has they like the home dog here, as this number has come down to 6.5 a little bit. It was up around 8.5 earlier in the week. What do you make of Mississippi State and Arizona State in Stark Vegas on Saturday night?
Yeah, you're right about that. It was a good spot there by Mississippi State to cover against Southern Miss. That was one of the trendy week one picks for a non-AQ to take down an SEC team along with the Toledo-Kentucky game. So with Mississippi State, nice win. It was pretty dominant too. Nothing misleading there. Solid victory. And yeah, so they bring Arizona State in, a team fresh off a Big 12 championship. A team I actually forecasted to win the conference, and after their opener, I downgraded them slightly, ever so slightly, as they failed to cover against Northern Arizona. But I still think you have great talent at Arizona State, and I think that the number has adjusted too far. I have it around 8.5, 9 points. I think it opened at 10.5. So I think it should still be up near that double-digit number. It's down under a touchdown. So I think there's some value with Arizona State. Per my numbers there. And, you know, I like the talent they have. Sam Levitt at quarterback, he's getting some first-round grades. They got Jordan Tyson at receiver. And the big question was, how would they replace Cam Scataboo, the do-it-all running back, and Relik Brown? He looked at phenomenal Saturday. Spin moves and hurdling guys. So I like what they have. And, yeah, I know it's going to be a tough environment. I was cracking up seeing this on Twitter, a video from an Arizona State practice where they were trying to acclimate them with cowbells. It was like one staffer with one little bell. I'm thinking, man, that's not going to make up for 50,000 cowbells they're about to walk into. So that might be a test in the first quarter for them. But once they get settled in, I think Arizona State's going to win this one and win it by more than 6.5.
Brett, this is great, man. I'm looking forward to doing this all year long with you. And just a reminder, where can folks get Pick 6 Plus?
Yeah, thanks so much. It's Pick 6 Previews on Twitter, picksixpreviews.com/plus. And on there, we have a sample package you can see. Just sent out week one today, but if you catch this before Saturday's games, I'll email out this week's batch again. But yeah, picksixpreviews.com. And I'm really honored to be on here every week with you. Can't wait to experience the season together.
Can't wait. It's going to be exciting. Brett, appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Tim.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, wrapping things up here on the podcast. Thanks to Brett Ciancia. Pick 6 Previews is where you can find him on social media. picksixpreviews.com/plus if you want to check out Pick 6 Plus for the upcoming college football season. As always, Wes Reynolds. Read all of his content over at VSiN.com and all of his picks over on the picks page. Those two gentlemen will be with us every Wednesday here
on the podcast. And just a reminder, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Like I said, on Tuesday's episode, the numbers were outrageous last week, and let's continue that rolling. And just a reminder, too, our Thursday podcast with Matt Eumanns will be on YouTube as well, youtube.com/VSinLive. It won't be streamed live, but it will be up very shortly after we record it, and we're hoping to get it out to you guys a little bit sooner this year than last year. Last year, remember, we were at the D. We did it live at around 2 p.m. Pacific time. We are now scheduling to do it a little bit earlier, so hopefully by drive time on the East Coast, the Thursday preview episode of the podcast is out. So leave us those five-star reviews. And it's much appreciated as we try to continue to grow this podcast. Couple of news and notes here as we try to keep updated on all of the injury news. Billy Edwards Jr., the quarterback for Wisconsin, looks like he will be out this week. Malik Fickell said that he is more than likely going to be sidelined as Danny O'Neill will get the start. Wisconsin this week is taking on Middle Tennessee, and I laugh because Middle Tennessee, the Fighting Derrick Masons, went out and lost outright to Austin Peay in week number one. So not sure what to make of Danny O'Neill getting the start against Middle Tennessee, a team who just got beaten by an FCS opponent in Austin Peay. We'll see what Wisconsin looks like next week when they play Alabama down there in Tuscaloosa. Also worth noting from an injury standpoint, Micah Alejado, the quarterback for Hawaii, a guy that I think many of us on this podcast were high on heading into the year. Timmy Chang certainly was high on, and both Alejado and Chang have been a bit second-guessing themselves, and I think rightfully so, as both have said in different statements, probably shouldn't have played against Arizona. Quick update on that. Tuesday, Alejado did not practice. He had a boot on his foot at practice. On Wednesday, not practicing either, at least early reports, but he did not have the boot on his foot. So we will see what ultimately comes of Hawaii against Sam Houston. I did take a little nibble on under 48.5 in this game. I do think Dennis Thurman's defense, despite Sam Houston State wanting to run up tempo, I think they should be able to have some success there. Sam Houston has not gotten off to a very impressive start to the year. Could be having a quarterback change as well there for the Bearcats with a K. So something to keep an eye on there. Timmy Chang did say that Alejado would be a game time decision for Saturday night's game. The late night game, it feels good. And just a reminder, folks, you know how in recent years we had to go through pay-per-view to try to watch the Hawaii late night games? Well, it's not going to be on network television, which is sad. It will be free, streaming free, I believe, on the Mountain West app. And I imagine you could stream that as well. So check out the Hawaii website, because you know all of us at midnight Eastern are going to want to watch the Hawaii game, especially when all of these games are wrapping up. The late night slate this week: Stanford, BYU, San Diego State, Washington State. And yeah, that'll be a pretty fun. I am going to close with a quote from Portland State's coach regarding BYU's quarterback. But just a reminder, folks, as we went out to Hawaii, as many of you know, our good friends at Rainbow Athletics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast all throughout the year, official source for game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards from your favorite Hawaii student-athletes. Every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, a signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Athletics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission, rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. Exclusive custom gear, word on the street, could be coming out with a pretty cool t-shirt here in the near coming days and weeks. So keep an eye out for that. RainbowAuthentics.com. They've got great hats. I'm wearing mine right now. RainbowAuthentics.com. Make sure you check them out. Mahalo to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, I want to close with this quote. This made me laugh out loud. So Portland State
has not gotten off to the best start to the college football season as they played Tarleton State in week zero, lost 42-0. And then last week they played BYU and they lost 69-0. So the head coach of Portland State was describing Bear Bachmeier, and his name is Bruce Barnum. And he was saying that he wanted to get out on the field to see what Bachmeier looked like, if his height and weight was exactly what he anticipated of it. And he said when he got out there, he looked like a goddamn centaur. Just hearing him talk about it made me laugh. I watched him during pregame because I hoped his height wasn't right or his weight wasn't right. But I looked him at it. But then I looked at his ass and his legs, and he looked like a goddamn centaur. Well, Portland State, I guess the centaur kicked them right in the junk because they beat them 69-0. BYU does play Stanford this week. This will be Stanford's first game since losing out on the island to Hawaii 23-20. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Ryan Hunter, our producer, as always. Thanks to our guests, Wes Reynolds and Brett Ciancia. Remember, the Thursday podcast, myself, Matt Newman's running through the full card as well as our best bets every Thursday right here on The Feed. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.